This is The Headline with Brandon Waltons, bringing you the biggest stories from across Texas. The Headline gives you the news you need to be an informed citizen.
Hello, everybody.
You actually eat nacho fries?
What?
You eat nacho fries?
Nacho fries? Nacho fries are coming back. Christmas Eve. Set your calendars at Taco Bell.
That's disgusting. I'm seeing here on the screen that you eat nacho fries. That's disgusting.
Go ahead. Okay, we're 10 seconds.
Sorry to interrupt.
10 seconds in. Michael's already hijacking the show, the headline with Michael Sullivan. I'm just here. But thank you for joining us this morning. With the headline, I'm Brandon Waltons. We got Michael Quinn Sullivan, the enforcer, the Taco Bell aficionado, whatever else you want to be called. And we're going to be looking at a few of the big stories from this week, but actually also this is going to be, just the way the calendar works, this is going to be the last show for the year. And so if you want to drop any comments, let us know. What was your favorite story of the year? What do you think was the biggest story of the year? It's probably hard to find some favorites in a year like 2020, but certainly are some diamonds in the rough, so to speak.
Yeah, look, I would suggest, and like Brandon said, I think it'd be fun to folks throw in there, what was your favorite story, what was the favorite thing out of the year, throw that in there. But, the thing that was most encouraging to me were the number of Texans who said, you know what, I think I've had enough. And that to me was very encouraging. I think that my very jaded, cynical mind would have said, Brandon, that, oh, well, everyone's just going to go along with this nonsense. And yet you've seen a lot of people stand up, people I would not necessarily have otherwise thought they would, who stand up and say, this really isn't government's job. I can take care of my family. I can run my business. I don't need government doing that. And that's been pretty exciting to see.
You certainly have absolutely seen that. I think we've talked about this at length before, but I actually do think this year, because of some of those negative things, like the shutdowns, like the mandates, you've actually got more folks who are waking up and actually getting involved and getting interested in what's going on, not just in D.C., but in their local government and state government as well. One of those big things yesterday, Governor Greg Abbott had a press conference.
And you were there.
And I was there, yes. It was cold. It was, in the morning. It was outside, socially distanced, of course.
You couldn't all huddle together with the other, hygiene-challenged reporters in the Capitol Press Corps?
Oh, no. Well, it's one of the, you like keeping a 6-foot, maybe 10-foot distance with a few of them. But but Governor Greg Abbott holding a press conference at a UPS facility in Austin, specifically to talk about the new shipments of these coronavirus vaccines that are coming in. And said pretty much kind of what you would expect. We've got an article up about it at texasscorecard.com. Essentially, this is something that's going to be available for healthcare workers, nursing homes, prisons, interestingly. But there were three big takeaways that were, I think, somewhat unexpected, specifically in light of some of Governor Abbott's recent behavior that I think are notable. Not sure really what the takeaway is, but one you had when he was talking about the vaccines. He has mentioned that vaccines will not be mandatory, that they will never be mandatory, right? They're not required. I think a lot of people look at that and say, well, maybe they'll never be technically mandatory, but, is it going to be, you just can't enter a business unless you've had it? I don't know.
Well, so this morning on replies to the Texas Minute, if you don't subscribe to the Texas Minute, would love for you to subscribe to the Texas Minute and all of our other digital publications here at Texas Scorecard. But a number of folks said, well, wait a second. I work in a hospital. I'm being told it's required for me to get the to get the vaccine and other things. And I think this is where the governor is probably going to need to explain what he means about it's not going to be mandatory and what does that mean? That kind of flows with a couple of other things that you reported on him talking about, where he kind of said a nice headline that's probably going to sell well to the Fox News crowd, but yet the substance underneath it is a little shaky.
Yeah, so that was the first kind of big thing he said. The next was in response to a question actually from a left-wing reporter who was criticizing that Texas wasn't shut down enough, which is kind of laughable if you really kind of talk to business owners and regular Texans. But Governor Abbott said that Texas will not shut down again that you know essentially railed against shutdowns, pointed to you know states like California that are shutting down and banning indoor dining and doing all the things that Governor Abbott himself did just earlier this year. And in fact, actually just a couple weeks ago, he did that for about a quarter of the population in North Texas, you know, closed bars, closed capacity at businesses and restaurants down to 50%. And so he says he's against the shutdowns. Shutdowns aren't going to happen. I've seen that headline kind of make its way in some national publications. But it's one of those things where the devil, I think, is in the details and how exactly you define a shutdown. Is keeping half a business closed a shutdown?
Most business owners would say that if I can't be 100% open, it's almost impossible for me to be anything less open. And you said a lot of restaurants, thousands of restaurants have been shuttered, never to open again because of these mandates. And I think those folks would say, oh, it's nice I can have 25, 50% capacity, but I can't make money that way. I can't employ my people. I can't pay my overhead. So I'm just going to have to go out of business. And so, you know, I guess there's this, you know, technical parsing that you find from our lawyer in chief who is saying, oh, well, I haven't closed a business. Yeah, but if businesses can't operate in a way that's profitable, you've closed them. And again, that's where kind of the devil's in the details.
Right. And speaking of closing and not being shut down, Governor Abbott also responding to a question from Texas Scorecard.
Do you always refer to yourself in the third person?
We like to do that, I think. Okay. But certainly, a question that we've written a lot about at Texas Scorecard and that folks have actually asked a lot. It's probably one of the biggest questions I get when going and speaking to groups, which is the Capitol going to be reopened? I asked him that, and he said the Capitol should reopen and that the Capitol will be reopened. And then, frankly, was kind of whisked away before I could really get down into, like, when or what does that look like? But I think these are important things. You now have Governor Greg Abbott on the record on these issues, and it's because of the pressure that citizens have put on the governor. And so, you know, he's on the record. Could he go back on these things? Certainly, but it makes it a lot harder. And so I think that's that in itself, getting these statements right now is a big victory for citizens in Texas.
Well, you know, you had a True Texas Project on Monday do a unanimous resolution calling for the Capitol mm-hmm. to be reopened. And I think there's some folks who might wonder, well, what's the big deal? The bar down the street is closed. Mm-hmm. My favorite restaurant is closed. Why should the Capitol be open? And the difference is that the Capitol belongs to the people of Texas. And most importantly, if you are going to exercise your First Amendment rights to petition your government for a redress of grievances, you kind of have to have somewhere to go to do that. Mm-hmm. And when you consider that a lot of the rumors, a lot of the kind of light proposals floating out there, none of them have actually maintained, you know, padlocks on the gates and armed guards at the doors. What they've all kind of pointed to is just making it so incredibly difficult for a normal person to go to the Capitol that the only people who'd be able to visit the Capitol with any sense of ease would be lobbyists in downtown Austin who can just kind of walk from their office and make appointments, things like that. Citizens would be forbidden from kind of showing up at the Capitol on a random Thursday and walking the halls with their kids. That's going to apparently be forbidden. And I think most of us would say that if I can't just show up at the Capitol and go walk office to office, then the Capitol's closed. So it's going to be interesting to see what the governor's definition of closed is. He didn't answer it. He didn't explain it to you. Maybe he'll explain it in the days to come.
Yeah, Janie down in the comments says, the governor doesn't have the authority to decide whose job is essential. Don't we all need to provide a roof over our head, electricity, food, car, gas, clothing, etc.? Who doesn't need these things? That's something we've heard a lot of folks say. But whether or not the Capitol is going to be reopened, there is going to be a new member in the Texas Senate when they reconvene in January. Tomorrow we've got a special election for Senate District 30. It's actually a special election runoff. This is
even more special.
This is the niche of niche elections, right? We were talking about this earlier, and this whole race, this is the one that pits State Representative Drew Springer against salon owner turned activist Shelley Luther. Up in North Texas, that you know, this entire race, which started back, I think, in September, is really, really illustrative of a lot of the bigger problems with the Austin Swamp and the problems that the establishment is going to face regardless who wins.
Yeah, this is a race when Pat Fallon, the incumbent state senator in Senate District 30, there was suddenly an opening for a congressional seat. He jumped at that, was successful in getting the party nomination, issued a resignation for his Senate seat. And so Pat Fallon has now left the Senate seat, and so the governor called a rush special election, gave people less than a week to file for office, and called for the election to be held in less than 30 days, which is just unheard of in modern Texas politics. You just don't have that. Yet the governor rushed the special election, all designed for the establishment candidate to win, all designed to favor someone who had a head start. And that someone, of course, was Drew Springer. So Drew Springer goes into that election, and in the normal way of things, the establishment should have gotten their way, and Drew Springer should have won outright in that special election back in September and should be a member of the Texas Senate. The problem, of course, is Shelley Luther.
Yes.
Shelley Luther is the fly in the ointment, who she stepped up to run for that office. She'd made a big national splash with her defiance of Governor Abbott's closure orders. Governor Abbott tried to, he did shut down all of the hair salons, barbershops, all the businesses in Texas. And she, you know, being a good citizen, read the rules, read the regulations, read the laws governing her business, and she said, wait a second, I'm allowed to be open. And so she reopened. The Democrats in Dallas County responded, taking the power the governor gave them, and she's reopened her business very famously and then got thrown in jail for a couple days for it. The Supreme Court released her, and so suddenly she's this cause celeb, you know, around the country, cable news networks, everyone else. So she was, because of Greg Abbott, she was uniquely positioned to be able to run for that state Senate seat. She jumps in, and so here's a seat that Drew Springer should have won outright, and yet Shelley Luther ended up coming in first. Now, granted, by, 120-some votes or something.
Really narrow margin.
but nonetheless, she came in first place in this race. And now, again, kind of this ongoing narrative of an election designed to benefit a particular party, rather than call the runoff election, 30 days later in October, or to coincide with the general election in November, instead the governor pushed it to the third Saturday in December. Again, kind of trying to give Drew Springer a chance to reset and reclaim, pull a lot of money. Springer's had millions of dollars flow into his account. So in a lot of ways, this election on Saturday, this election tomorrow, is going to in many ways require Drew Springer to overperform. If he's going to win, if he's going to be seen as the winner tomorrow, he has to win not by 50% plus one, not by a couple of votes. He's going to have to win by double digits. He's going to have to win really big. Otherwise, it's going to be a reminder that Texans really aren't happy with this, because everyone gets, again, a special election designed to let the establishment run roughshod over the voters, and the voters have thus far not had anything to do with that. I'm not privy to any of the internal polling in any of these campaigns. Shelley Luther or Drew Springer, either one of them could win. They're both names on the ballot. But the real loser, no matter who wins, the real loser tomorrow is going to be the Austin establishment. And look, it's going to make a bit of a ding, a little bit of a scratch on the side of Greg Abbott's presidential aspirations car. Greg Abbott and his team have made no bones about the fact that he wants to be president of the United States and run for president of the United States in 2024. And if he can't engineer a special election to get one of his cronies elected, it's going to make some people think twice about his ability to put together a national presidential campaign.
Yeah, I think the whole campaign, I think, as you said, has been really, really illustrative of this ongoing sort of battle. I mean, we just saw, I think it was last week or maybe the week before, that you had Drew Springer's campaign actually sending out very clearly Democrat-focused targeted mailers. Remember, this is a special election, and so there's no primaries. It's Republican or Republican in this runoff, but Democrats are able to vote in this. Democrats can kind of vote in our Republican primaries, too, but this for sure.
Democrats actually run in Republican primaries. That's a whole other issue.
That's a whole other conversation. So a lot can happen, but it's certainly going to be one to watch. And already, as you said, I think it's already a big, big loss that we're even here a week away from Christmas. I mean, it's going to be 6 days from Christmas. And the fact that they're having to do this, I think, is a big loss for them.
Great question here from Joel Starnes, one of those fantastic activists in the Metroplex. He asks, has Drew Springer vacated his House seat? And the answer is no. In fact, Drew Springer was just reelected to the Texas House in his, you know, in the, you know, the small House district, that part of which is in this Senate district, back in first of November.
Yep.
So, you know, you're sitting there with Drew Springer just elected to the Texas House. Now, let's say Drew Springer wins. That's now a new, yet another election that has to happen. It's going to be interesting to see, is Greg Abbott going to call a flash special election to be held, you know, very early in January, or is he going to kind of revert to norm and have that seat sit vacant for, you know, some period of time?
I don't know. And not even to, I mean, I don't know if I want to jinx it here or not, but you have a special election for that seat, you can easily have a special election runoff for that seat.
That's right.
You could have, it's sort of funny to watch how the dominoes fall on this. You have Ratcliffe leave to be Director of National Intelligence, causes Pat Fallon to be elected at a convention for his seat. We've got two elections here, could potentially have two if Springer wins and there's a runoff for his seat. You know, there might be someone seated for that, and Ratcliffe might actually already have left the office by that point. So kind of an interesting game of political dominoes there. We asked y'all, kind of what your biggest stories or what your favorite stories of the year were. I think in a really general sense, as I kind of think about that, Michael, I mean, it really has been not obviously the lockdowns have not been my favorite, you know, the business closures have not, but it is the stories of people like Shelley Luther. And when I say Shelley, I'm talking about even at this point, not candidate Shelley Luther,
but
business owner Shelley Luther and that whole story. We've also seen, we've been to rallies and been to events where, you know, it's been really, really, I think, refreshing to see folks actually waking up and getting involved in the process. And people who never would have been involved before. I remember over the summer we were at a rally in Laredo where a couple of girls were actually arrested similarly for doing kind of a sting operation for doing like eyebrow threading and
McAllen.
And it was Laredo.
Was it Laredo?
It was Laredo. 100% sure.
Okay.
100%
sure.
There. But they were arrested for that. And you know, to see the people coming out, I mean, there were literally tattoo shop owners are coming up in full force, and hair salon owners and people that you wouldn't normally see out there. I think it's really, really awakening people, and I think that's been, I think, kind of a silver lining on this whole year.
Yeah, and it's interesting here in the comments, a number of folks are talking about the vaccine, and I think that, you know, as we're kind of coming towards the end of the year, my guess is that's going to be a big story in 2021 how effective is the vaccine? Is it safe? Is it not safe? You know, you're talking about a vaccine that, you know, literally 10 months ago, it wasn't even an idea in anyone's head to have a vaccine for something called COVID-19, since COVID-19 12 months ago didn't exist in anyone's mind. And now there's this vaccine being shipped out by the millions. I think a lot of people do have some very legitimate questions. Just, you know, set aside some of the bigger concerns that some people have about vaccines, just this particular vaccine. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be interesting as we head into the new year to see what kind of stores generated, what kind of mandates come out, what kind of requirements come out.
Yeah. Are you going to get it as soon as you can? Or are you going to kind of let some other folks be the guinea pigs on
that? I'm an early adopter when it comes to technology. Uh-huh. I'm much more happy to see if you grow an arm out of your forehead when you get it. So.
Yeah. Well, one of the biggest stories this year as well has been election fraud. A lot of folks becoming aware of stuff going on, not just in Texas, but we've seen kind of accusations and allegations made across the country that have raised a lot of questions about election integrity. And this has been interesting because this is something that even post-election actually now becomes even more important in Texas, right, because of the Texas legislature meeting and because they will now have the opportunity to actually go and pass some meaningful election integrity reform. And that's going to be, you know, that's going to be one of the issues that we're going to be following closely at Texas Scorecard during the session.
Yeah, and, you know, look, I think it's been fun to watch in this debate, you know, when you see the kind of shift back and forth of the language that the left uses. Just 5-6 years ago, you had a Democrat-appointed, left-of-center federal judge condemn Senate Bill 2 at the time, which was the big photo ID bill, very, you know, controversial, the idea that you should maybe show an ID when you vote, even though the government requires you to show an ID if you're checking out a book. The government requires you to show a photo ID if you're flying on an airplane. You have to have a photo ID if you're going to get a job. You have to photo ID if you're going to go to the bank. All these things, but for some reason, you shouldn't have a photo ID when you go vote. I've never quite understood the left's logic on that, but this federal judge said, oh no, you shouldn't worry about Senate Bill 2. Senate Bill 2 and photo ID is flawed because it does nothing about mail-in ballots. That was that was a federal judge's official ruling back 5 or so years ago. And yet now today, the Democrats don't want us talking about mail-in ballot fraud. Don't want us to look at the problems involved with that. So apparently, nothing is allowed to be discussed when it comes to election fraud. And that, I would argue, is the is kind of the point I think a lot of folks are beginning to key on is that for some reason, the Democrats and the left are really interested in protecting election fraud.
Mm-hmm. It's something we've seen in the state legislature, and we've seen it across the country. And like I said, it's something we're going to continue to watch and continue to report on and get folks involved in.
Someone else says two weeks
to slow the spread, the big story. It's been the longest 2 weeks I know of. That's for sure.
It's felt it. It's felt it.
So anyways, as I mentioned, this is going to be our last program of the headline for this year. Hope everybody has a great Christmas. Happy New Year. You doing anything special for your social distancing for Christmas?
No.
No.
No. No more than usual.
Yeah.
No. It's very exciting. Got all three kids home for Christmas. It's going to be fun. Actually, going to have an additional hanger on with us at Christmas this year. The boyfriend of my oldest daughter is going to be with us. That'll be exciting. We're going to have a good time.
I'm looking forward to getting to see my family.
We'll go see your family
as well.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
And so, we'll keep it under 10 people or whatever they say. I'm sure it'll keep to that size. And we'll be wearing masks and we won't hug. And, you know, we'll
stay 6 feet away from
just
each other.
Just in case, you know, Governor Abbott, you know, we're gonna be doing everything by the board. Don't worry about it.
I'm going to be purposely flaunting all of it.
Yeah, there you go.
We're going to spend the entire time hugging. It's going to be great.
Excellent. Well, thank you to everybody watching. Vanessa watching from San Francisco. Wow. Rebecca watching from the Woodlands. Yvonne from Odessa. Danny checking in from Spicewood. We've got Earl watching in East Tennessee. And Steph watching from Deer Park. Yeah, we've got this is a national show now.
It's a national show.
Yeah, we'll see. Maybe we can get some international.
They heard my
viewers.
Shiny head was going to be on.
that was the draw. So we got the Michael bump here. So
yeah, there you go.
All right. So thank you so much. All right. I think this probably run its course now. But thank you again so much for watching. Thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you next year. Thank you. Have a great weekend. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Thank you for listening to The Headline from Texas Scorecard. We're live every Friday at 11 a.m. on the Texas Scorecard Facebook page to talk about the biggest stories of the week, so check us out there or listen to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, whatever platform you prefer. And while you're there, you can also check out the ever-growing line of podcasts and programming provided by Texas Scorecard.